The following program, The Russ Belville Show, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate to the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate any illegal activity and encourage all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers on The Russ Belville Show are their own, and The Russ Belville Show cannot be held legally responsible for their validity or reliability. Viewer discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it.
And it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
Yeah! From the promise of legalization. To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Brought to you by the National Cannabis Coalition.
Yeah, I hear you had a question for me.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Oh, yeah, we got a question for you, all right. It is Thursday, July 19th, 2012, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Welcome to the show. Welcome to Rolla J Studios here in beautiful Potland, Oregon. We are going to have ourselves one excellent program today. Joining us here in the studio, we've got over to my right our co-host and producer, Wiz Calico. How you doing, Calico?
Aloha. Doing quite well, man. Glad to be here.
Fantastic. Over here on the engineer station, we have our co-host and engineer, Ganja John.
What's up, Russ? How are you, buddy?
I'm doing good. I'm glad to see you're alive.
I am alive.
I heard the Columbia River almost got you.
It took a few of my belongings as well.
You had to make a sacrifice to the river gods,
yeah,
I take it.
Yeah, I guess so.
And very special announcement. Joining us here on the other camera, Cannabis, Carrie is in the house. Hi, Carrie.
Hi. A little worse for the wear. I partied with Ganja John until 5:30 in the morning.
Yeah, that'll happen. I know how that goes. Carrie, of course, is our news director, and she brings us all of our Cannabis Chronicles, the daily headlines in marijuana law reform. So what do we got in the news today?
You know, it's a good day to be in studio, Russ, because I have two pretty good stories today. We're going to talk about some progress in the New Jersey program. We're also going to talk about some restriction easing here in Oregon for transplant patients. Mm. And then I've got some more information about that bribery scandal that's going down in Los Angeles County. That's all coming up today on the news.
All right. We will check that out right after this first break. Also, we have got our Daily Toker Tunes for the day. Today's Groovin' Thursday. And so Ganja John's going to get us in the groove today. A little bit of old school, I understand?
Not old school. Old school rapper that Calico was hating on early. Talib Kweli and Currency and Kendrick Lamar. So not old school at all. It's fresh, hot off the presses.
All right. I was just thinking Talib goes back to my day. But,
that'll
be real cool. Looking forward to that. At half past, today, of course, is a first or third Thursday. And on first and third Thursdays, cops say legalize drugs. And we've got one of the best ones from Leap here. Peter Crist, a retired police captain from Syracuse, New York, is joining us. He is one of the best speakers Leap has. And we're going to just pick his brain on how we're going to end this stupid war on drugs. And then at the end of the show, time for a little bit of a radical rant. I'm going to talk about the recent popularity of coming out against marijuana prohibition. We're seeing celebrities, we're seeing athletes, we're seeing people all over, politicians, even TV preachers who have finally realized that the war on drugs is a failure, it's stupid, we've got to end it. We're going to talk about that, how this is becoming the new cultural norm, and what we can do to keep pushing that ball over the next level we've got to get it, to get marijuana legalization. So we hope you join us for that. Also, coming up on tomorrow's show, you got to join us tomorrow. We have got Stephen D'Angelo, the CEO of Harborside Health Center, is going to join us. He's going to tell us about the protest they're going to have on Monday at President Obama's fundraiser in Oakland, which we will be bringing to you live here on National Cannabis Radio. I still have to work out the times, but our good friend Sam Chapman is going to be down there helping us with the streaming. We're going to stream live from Oakland, their protest on National Cannabis Radio. Also on Monday, we have got very special guest, Green Party presidential candidate Dr. Jill Stein, will be joining us on the show at 3:30. So you'll want to check that out on Monday. And then on Tuesday, we're bringing you live coverage of our protest of President Obama, asking him to please let the states decide marijuana policy. You can get information on our Facebook page at The Russ Belville Show or at National Cannabis Radio. We'll be Tuesday from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. right here on NCR 420. Business. We're going to take a break.
It's simply business.
When we come back, the Daily Cannabis Chronicle.
It's simply business.
Stick around.
You know why they won't let us grow. It's simply business.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420 friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation, brought to you by the National Cannabis Coalition.
It's simply business. It's simply business. It's simply business. You know why they won't let us grow. It's simply business. It's simply business. You know why they won't let us grow. It's simply business.
Support the Russ Belville Show. Text the word RUSS to 420-420 and connect with the National Cannabis Coalition. You can also send $10 to the Russ Belville Show right from your smartphone. That's RUSS to 420-420. You're listening to Radical RUSS on the Russ Belville Show. I have a package here for Radical Rick. Is there a Radical Rick here? How about a Rick Russ? Any Rick Russ? Somebody named Freddie Farrakh has sent him a package. Anybody? What is that? Smells like a skunk. Marijuana is not going to re-legalize itself. You've got to do your part. Join the National Cannabis Coalition today at nationalcannabiscoalition.com. Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, ganja sacrament, consumer cannabis. The topic of marijuana is heating up the news, and the Russ Belville Show catches you up with today's latest headlines. Now, here's our senior news editor, Cannabis Carrie, with the Daily Cannabis Chronicle.
After a long, hard battle, we have some news to report from New Jersey. After a long, hard battle, we have some news to report from New Jersey. In a move that the state's medical marijuana program is finally moving forward, the first crop of marijuana plants are currently growing in the Garden State. The Montclair Compassion Center, one of six medical marijuana dispensaries that got the green light, has begun cultivation, and after a few weeks, they can report that New Jersey's first legal marijuana is currently about 1 foot tall. New Jersey's new crop is being grown indoors hydroponically in a 5,000-square-foot warehouse at an undisclosed location. The Greenleaf Compassion Center runs that Montclair dispensary, and Joseph Stevens, their president, said that the plants growing right now will be ready to harvest by mid-September when they plan on opening their doors and providing the first New Jersey medical marijuana patients with marijuana. Stevens says his agency has spent about $350,000 in startup costs to get to this point. New Jersey passed a medical marijuana law 2 years ago, but the state government led by Governor Chris Christie have been making it very difficult to get that program to move forward. Now, a second New Jersey dispensary, Compassionate Care Foundation, is also getting a crop in and says that they should have their first legal medicine in November for sale. Greenleaf says that they have been getting calls every day from people interested, potential patients, but until they open their doors, the demand for legal medical marijuana in New Jersey is still rather unclear. The restrictions on patients to enter the program are the strictest of the medical marijuana state programs, and the State Division of Gaming Enforcement, which typically vets casino owners for possible organized crime ties, is nearly finished with all the extensive background checks on those other four dispensaries. Those other four providers are, quote, actively searching or in negotiations for locations, but so far have not secured a spot and have not begun growing their medical marijuana. We will keep you posted on all their progress.
You know, the New Jersey program, it's nice that they're no longer the no garden state, unless, of course, you're talking about individuals having a garden, and then, you know, they're still the no garden state. Patients still can't grow their own in New Jersey. But we're one step further along on the process, so at least that's always good news when we get that kind of news. You know, the New Jersey program's been wrought with all sorts of problems, and there's one person you can point the finger of blame at, and that is New Jersey Governor Chris Christie. I was reading on Chris Goldstein's blog about how he was playing doctor on the radio the other day, talking, you know, how these politicians like to go off and say, oh, these people don't really need medical marijuana. There's other medicines that can work better for them. And that always, for me, just begs the question, so? So what? Why do you have to take the possibly best medicine? And number two, you're wrong. For many people, it is the best medicine. But number three, what are you doing getting involved in this, Governor Christie? You're not a doctor. Let's keep these decisions between doctors and patients and get the hell out of the way. Let people be treated with what a DEA judge called the safest therapeutically active substance known to man. We shouldn't be punishing these people. We're going to follow up, too, because there's so many other unanswered questions about the New Jersey program. You know, when Governor Christie was originally trying to keep it restricted to just three strains. That's right, three different varieties of medical cannabis. That's all for the whole state, three varieties, and to keep those varieties at less than 10% THC. Wow, that's not even medical marijuana where I come from. So, you know, we're going to follow up on that and find out if that's still in the rulemaking process or what kind of plants they've actually got planted now that are 1 foot tall. Are they just the three strains? Are they less than 10% THC? We don't have that from the news story, but we will find that information out for you a little bit later. Also, in other New Jersey news, they've started that doctor registry system. Yeah, you heard me right. Doctor registry system. In the state of New Jersey, only medical marijuana state, where not just patients have to register, but if you're a doctor who wants the permission to be able to recommend medical marijuana to your patients, you've got to register with the state. No, that's not going to scare some doctors off. That's not going to freak them out when they know the medical board's looking at them, when they know the DEA's looking at them. Yeah, that's not going to be a problem whatsoever. It just seems to me in New Jersey, they want to do everything they can to deny getting the medicine to the patients, and I don't believe it can really go forward until we get rid of Governor Chris Christie.
And with prohibition comes corruption. Former Councilman Osvaldo Conde had recently stepped down from his role in the wake of charges against him for bribery, and today he pled guilty to bribery and extortion charges. He is the most recent of three of number of Los Angeles County officials that had been snared in a bribery sting. Last month, a councilman in Santa Fe Springs, a Los Angeles County community, pled guilty that he took $11,500 in bribe money in exchange for letting a dispensary owner keep his store open. In the nearby city of Cudahy, three city officials faced similar charges. The crimes were made public by the dispensary operator, who became a confidential informant for the FBI in the case. Former Santa Fe Springs Mayor, 62-year-old Joseph Serino, admitted that he asked a dispensary owner to give him money in exchange for information about the city's plan to control the dispensaries, and then he made him promises that he would influence the city in his favor. In a plea agreement, the former mayor admitted to taking that $10,000 check along with a $1,500 payment. Serrano is waiting for his sentence, which could be up to 10 years in prison for those crimes. Now, Osvaldo Conde pled guilty of accepting $7,000 to go easy on the dispensaries in Cudahy and allow them to remain open. His lawyer said after his plea that Mr. Conde greatly regretted his actions, and he's now stepping up to the plate and taking full responsibility for what he did. Now, out of those three, Conde, Silva, and Perales were all accused of accepting a total of $17,000 in cash from that dispensary owner turned FBI informant. Silva served on the Cudahy City Council for more than 20 years, and the corruption charges go farther than just marijuana dispensaries. Silva's also accused of taking a bribe from a developer who wanted to purchase land from the city at a discount price.
Well, as we've always said, you know, prohibition corrupts. This is what's going to happen. And this is one of the sad aspects of this, you know, baby steps that we have to take toward legalization. You know, we can wave a magic wand and just remove marijuana from the Controlled Substances Act federally and in all the states, we would. But the way politics are, we're going to have to take this step by step by step. And so one of the steps that's had to been taken is the step of medical use of marijuana, an exception to criminal prosecution for people we deem too sick to put in a cage for pot. Now, that's one of the natural evolutionary steps that this has had to take. So when it takes that little step toward the legal medical use, it's not that far away still from that whole criminal element, the whole criminal marketplace, the whole underground, unregulated market, where things like bribery and corruption are just the natural costs of doing business. And so the little step that we take toward legalization gets tainted, if you will, by all of the criminal and nefarious things that are still going on in the unregulated market. And that gives us our opponents an opportunity to say, aha, see, we gave you an inch and look what happened. We went this far and oh my God, now they're taking bribes at the city council and the dispensaries are bribing people. And see, those dispensary owners are just bad, bad people because they're bribing. No, not at all. These dispensary owners are businessmen. They're entrepreneurs. They are the very heart of the American economy. They're one of the few growth industries we still have in literal terms as well as figurative terms, literally growing money on trees, right? We have a situation in America where we don't make anything anymore. Our Olympic uniforms are made in China, people. The one thing we got going here in America these days is marijuana. We got the best marijuana in the world, and we are leading the world in the production and the understanding of this plant, despite all of our government's attempts to prevent us from doing so. And you want to tamp that down? You want to kill the jobs that are available there and at the same time hurt the people that desperately need that medicine? No, the corruption here, the bribery here is not the fault of the dispensaries. It's the fault of this system. It's the fault of this prohibition that forces us to have to do things that regular businesses don't have to do. Regular businesses can survive in the free market, and we just want the same respect. We just want the same rights to be able to run our businesses like everyone else.
Talked a considerable amount on this subject, and now I'm happy to report that OHSU Hospital, a research hospital in Portland, Oregon, has been quietly easing restrictions on marijuana use among patients who are seeking organ transplants. Now, this shift has been due in part because of the rising number of medical marijuana patients in the state of Oregon. The hospital in the last year has been shifting its longstanding policy that required 6 months of negative drug screens and, in some cases, drug counseling and rehabilitation for marijuana users before patients would even be added to the wait list for a liver transplant. Now, the revised policy allows marijuana users who meet all other criteria to be waitlisted for liver transplants if a single screen turns up negative. Now, this new policy also applies to OHSU's kidney, pancreas, and heart transplant programs, but most of the discussion is focused on liver patients where marijuana use seems to be common. Mike Seeley, OHSU's Administrator for Transplant Services, says it's been our responsibility to see what's reasonable. OHSU is the home to the state's largest transplant program, and it's also one of the country's oldest programs, and the Portland Veterans Affairs Medical Center performs liver transplants in Oregon at the facility. The new policy applies to both of the facilities, which share a team of liver specialists and surgeons. Surgeons on the team performed 60 liver transplants last year, and OHSU typically performs about 20 heart and 100 kidney and 8 to 14 pancreas transplants annually. Now, marijuana advocates say access to Oregon transplant programs is an ongoing problem for medical marijuana patients nationwide. Some transplant programs require many months of the clean drug screen before a patient can be considered for placement on a transplant list, and doctors decided to revisit the policy after seeing potential transplant candidates who were medical marijuana patients with no obvious addiction problems be turned away. Dr. Nagler of OHSU, who helped write the new policy, said about it, quote, "If you had a beer last weekend, no one would say you're an alcoholic. You might be, but it doesn't mean you are. And we've taken the same approach to marijuana. If you had it last weekend, you may not have an abuse problem." Nationwide, 16,011 patients are on a liver transplant list. The agency says another 92,853 patients in the country are on the kidney waiting list.
Well, no surprise to me that you see so many liver patients with marijuana use, because just about every other pain-killing drug they can take is awful for their livers. And I hope this is good news for our own Jim Klar, one of our activists here in Oregon, who's been without his medical marijuana for years now because he's been sitting on that list. And of course, our own Ganja John, you've got personal experience with these OHSU people. I mean, what do you think about this?
Yeah, I got my first transplant through OHSU, and my second one was through another hospital. But when I tried to transfer because of the problems I was having with my marijuana use, they didn't seem super keen on me using marijuana, but it wasn't as big of a deal. Mm-hmm. And I've heard people getting transplants while smoking their entire time through dialysis. So, you know, I think this is a change that they're now just making official, but it's something that they were ignoring before with a lot of people because especially those without addiction problems, which was common in liver transplants, because it's just not worth the bad publicity.
Yeah, the publicity is awful, and we've been bringing this to the fore. Thanks, John, for everything you've done on this issue, bringing this to the people's attention. And we're so glad that this is finally changing, and people are starting to recognize that marijuana use can be a part of conventional medical treatment. People that need transplants need marijuana. It's better for their organs.
It's 420 back in Idaho, where Russ and Carrie were born. So we have to go connect with our roots. You know what I mean? Please support these sponsors who support the Russ Belville Show.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would sell you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. Please do not give up your precious liberties. There's nothing wrong with standing up for our constitutional rights, and in fact, it's the only way to honor the Constitution that recognizes our natural rights. Treat law enforcement with respect and respect the Constitution by standing up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, stand up for your rights by repeating, "I respectfully invoke all my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak to my attorney, Omar Figueroa." Omar Figueroa has more than a decade of experience in federal and California courts and graduated from Yale University, Stanford Law School, and Trial Lawyers College. Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215 or on the web at www.omarfigueroa.com.
If we're locking up people that take a couple of puffs of marijuana and the next thing you know, they got 10 years, they've got mandatory sentences, and these judges just say, they throw up their hands and say, there's nothing we can do, it's mandatory sentences. We've got to take a look at what we're considering crimes.
When the Reverend Pat Robertson from television's The 700 Club,
criminalizing marijuana, criminalizing the possession of a few ounces of pot and that kind of thing, I mean, it's just...
makes more sense on the marijuana issue than the president, the Congress, and the Supreme Court.
It's costing us a fortune, and it's ruining young people. Young people go into prisons, they come out, they go in as youths, and they come out as hardened criminals, and it's not a good thing.
You know we're winning.
Everyone knows music and marijuana go together, so let's wind up our 20 after break with the Russ Belville Show's Daily Toker Tunes, the best in pod safe 420 music from around the web. Today is Groovin' Thursday, featuring rap, hip-hop, soul, and funk music. You can get downloads and more information about all our Daily Toker Tunes by visiting music.radicalrust.com. Now, sit back and enjoy your Daily Toker Tune.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. 20 after, 24 after now, having a break. And Carrie was all excited. It was her first 420 break in the studio in a long time. So.
I know, right? That was fun.
Yeah. So for today's Groovin' Thursday, we are going to turn things over to Ganja John, who's got some tunage for us. So John, tell us about the artist and what we're about to hear.
We've heard Talib Kweli here a lot. We've heard Talib Kweli throughout the last 20 years of hip-hop that I remember. And... Coleco said it was old school. He sounded a lot like Soulja Boy when he said it, talking shit about Ice-T. I don't know how I feel about that.
Please do not ever compare me to Soulja Boy. There are plenty other insults out there that I will put into. Please not that one.
But without further ado, let's try this out and see how this works. This is Talib Kweli, Kendrick Lamar, and Currency with Push Through.
Bars, slide cars on track, falling off, gain scars in these rap walls. Ain't nothing band-aids won't cover. Touring with 7D coverage, live bands, two buses, my own cash, no budget, no major label fundings. Jets, baby, we went from crawling to walking to running. You can't say nothing, you under gag order. Hopping out of Audis, hurting y'all with kicks, I'm the transporter. Think about it, never mind, you ain't gotta. I'm already on some whole other word to your motherfucking self. Nobody else gonna do it for you, nobody else. And now and then someone to offer you help, but they ain't doing nothing till they really see you trying to do something. I ain't bluffing, Kush puffing on you jive turkeys, stuffing stockings with these gifts. Audible applaudables, homie, take a whiff.
Expecting nothing is spoken or produced, and never got time for no excuses. You gotta go beyond my flow, it's time foolery. I smoke these poor rappers so fast they come into charcuterie. I beautifully exude the vibe that's free of ambiguity. Your goonery, for the sake of goonery, is cartoons to me, it's coonery, it's lunacy. Let's make it plain. Only way that you hang is attached to a tree. The moon talk to the sea and speak a body language fluently. She make it rain when I'm on fire. She always try to douse me. Only reason that you make it rain is cause your diamond's cloudy. I see you from a mile away when they get overcast. Old people feel it in their bones. Invade your home like I broke the glass and let myself in. Fighting for freedom like the people in Tunisia. Spread through Sudan and Egypt. This the music for the movement. The score to your achievements. Never join them, so you gotta beat them. It's Carpe Diem. Hey.
Hey.
Yeah.
I rise as day breaks. Clouds side the sun's rays. Quicksand and mistakes. Smash walls to get through.
Gardeners, my vision's bothered by vigilantes that harbor on street corners. Try your hardest to harvest bundles of weed on you. The starving, the speed on you, stampede on you, impede on your pockets, then pee on you. Dreams of us living lavish in fabrics of fine linen, spinning established with women dining and laughing. But this environment got us violent, ready to crash in. To society, take this driver's seat, hope you fastened your seatbelts twice. When I rolled them dice, I crapped. So many times I could build casinos from scratch. Too many depths you might receive from the things you achieve. Relax, that's what my mental say, but my physical's been detached. I'm on some other shit, like fuck the government. I'm higher rankings, where's the mothership? I made a covenant that I was changing, but my luck has been quite disgusting when reality tainted. Where the fuck you been? Left him face down like he was blinking. In a cold world where old girl and a homeboy got a motive. You could bitch curl your tribulations, that sensation's insulting. Got a wifey or a mistress, nigga, which one you indulging? Regardless of who you pick, no life's a bitch when you ain't focused. Nigga, I'm focused.
I rise as day breaks, clouds hide the sun's rays, quicksand and mistakes, smash walls to get through.
Dan Michael. If you're looking for professional voice talent for your commercial or podcast, I'm your man. Visit danmichaelsaudio.com for more information.
Mm. Ooh. Ooh. I like it like that. Well, I don't know what you came to do.
Oh yeah, we're definitely keeping the funk alive here at National Cannabis Radio. This is Big Daddy Fink, and I want you to join me at the Funky Roller Rink, where it's always a funky party, y'all. Every Tuesday night at 11 Eastern, 8 Pacific. Keep it funky, keep it funky, keep it funky, keep it funky.
Which of you are ready to admit to having used marijuana in the past? And they want us to go around and ask each of you. Senator Kerry? Yes or no?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Senator Edwards?
Yes.
Senator Lieber?
I have a reputation for giving unpopular answers at Democratic debates. I never use marijuana. Sorry.
I think you'd probably be a lot cooler if you had, Senator.
Smoke a little pot, drink a little wine. Everything will be just fine. Smoke a little pot, drink a little wine. Everything will be just fine.
One of the most disturbing elements of the Prohibition War is how it's made police the enemy of otherwise law-abiding cannabis consumers. Fortunately, one group of police officers knows the futility of Prohibition and reaches out to educate the community and current law enforcement. Today, the Russ Belville Show visits with another speaker from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition with one clear message. Cops say legalize drugs.
Welcome back, everybody. 31 after the hour, and I'm really thrilled to have on the phone with us Peter Crist, a retired police captain from Syracuse, New York, and one of the finest speakers from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. How you doing, Peter?
Pretty good, Russ. Thanks for having me on the show and sharing your audience with me.
Oh, so happy to do so. I wanted to start by talking about how popular it seems now to be coming out against the drug war. You know, we're seeing celebrities and people all coming out now and saying the drug war is a failure. We've got to do something else. And it seems to me as if the ONDCP and the drug warriors have heard this and can read the polls. And it seems like they're trying to shift their message to saying, oh, we're kinder, gentler drug warriors. It's all about, you know, treatment and prevention. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are on that as far as this shift, it seems, in the ONDCP's rhetoric.
Well, Gilikowski said that this is fundamentally a healthcare and an educational problem, the drug issue in our society. And I found that very interesting. What I found most interesting was no other reporter that was there when he said that asked him the question. And the question that should have been asked is, what other healthcare problem do you think we should use the criminal justice system to deal with rather than the healthcare system?
Yeah, we hear that from, I heard Kevin Sabet debating Ethan Nadelman the other day, and he made a reference of treatment and prevention backed with the, I don't know if he said coercion or something like that, of the criminal justice system.
Well, you know, we used to do that with a thing called insanity.
Oh, right.
We used to put people in prison for that, to put that pressure on them so that they wouldn't act insane. This is... When we started this organization back in 2002, and by the way, I want to mention something that's important about this year. This is our 10th anniversary.
That's right. Really.
And because of that being our 10th anniversary, the federal government has named this a leap year. So I'm not going to get away with that, am I?
I love it. No, I'm all for it.
But anyhow, when we formed this organization, we had to come up with a name. And Jack Cole and I, who are two of the co-founders, were talking about it. And I came up with the name Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. And if you notice, we're not law enforcement against drug prohibition. We're not law enforcement against marijuana prohibition. We are law enforcement against prohibition. And what we mean by prohibition is when you use the criminal justice system and criminalize consensual adult behavior. Hmm. Now, these are activities between consenting adults. Russ wants to buy drugs. Petey wants to sell them. We're both happy, okay? Now, there's other people that don't think we should be doing this, so they want to criminalize this activity because they think they can stop it by doing that. But all they accomplish when they criminalize that type of activity is they create more crime in their society. And if there's a money connection to that activity, like there is in drug dealing, then you also create violence in your society, because if there is a dispute in this business place about the money, they don't have access to the civil court system to settle it, so they settle it on the streets with violence. So what we at LEAP are formed about is getting the criminal justice system out of the consensual crime business. Let me give you an example from America's wonderful history. I saw a thing on PBS about a year ago, and it was about the gay issue in America. And it started out by putting up on the screen a little blurb, and it said, in 1960, it was illegal to be gay in every state but Illinois. Now, I don't know why Illinois was more sophisticated than all the rest of the states.
Land of Lincoln, perhaps? I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe maybe liberty meant more to them, all right? But that's an interesting example of what we're talking about, consensual adult activity. We've done this. We did this with the thing called the numbers racket that flourished for decades in this country, using 13, 14-year-old kids as numbers runners to run numbers for the mob, making millions of dollars for the mob. And we tried to arrest it out of existence, and we couldn't put a dent in it. Because just like the drug trade, every time we made an arrest, all we did was create a job opening and was filled instantly because there was just too much money in it. And then one day, the mob shut the whole thing down, shut the numbers racket down. Now, amazing. Amazing.
No.
That was the same day that we changed its name to the lottery.
That's right.
Because we legalized it, regulated and controlled it. And that didn't stop, that didn't solve our gambling problem. You know, there's still people that are dumb enough to blow their whole paycheck on the numbers, you know, playing the lottery and stuff like that. But it put a big dent in our crime problem. We don't have 13-year-old kids running numbers for the mob anymore. And we don't have the violence connected with that marketplace that existed before. So that's what we at Leap are talking about. We're talking. We are not talking about this because it's interesting. A large part of this movement is focused around the issue of marijuana. And my question is to a lot of them, and it has been for 25 years since I got into this movement back in 1989. What are we going to do once they legalize marijuana? How are we going to convince them that meth really isn't that bad? Or how are we going to convince them that heroin's kind of cool? You know, or it's got a health use. No, it has nothing to do with how bad the drugs are. In fact, the interesting thing about when you mentioned Sabat, I did a debate with him about 8 years ago when he was just kicking in. And when I opened my debate with him, as I do with any drug prohibitionist when I'm in a debate, I start out by telling my audience what we both agree about. My opponent and I, what we both agree about. And what we both agree about is these drugs are dangerous, they're harmful, you shouldn't use them, stay as drug-free as you can stay. That we both agree about. But we aren't here today to argue in front of you, this wonderful audience, about that. We both agree on that. We're here to say what is the best way to control this problem. He, my opponent, believes that having gangsters, thugs, and terrorists run the marketplace is better than having licensed, regulated businesses run the marketplace. That's what we're debating here today. And that's what we're debating from Leap. I ask people all the time, and nobody's ever said no to this or said yes to this question. Do you think it is possible to actually win the war on drugs? Now, if we win the war on drugs, that means that we have removed the word marijuana from the dictionary because it just doesn't exist anymore. Heroin is gone. Nobody knows anything about cocaine because we won the war. We defeated the drugs. And nobody I ask that question of says yes, they think that's possible.
Right.
So that really changes our discussion, does it? Because if we can't make drugs go away, and by the way, anytime you hear anybody talks about a drug-free neighborhood or a drug-free school, or a drug-free city, or a drug-free America, remind them in the biggest prison system on this planet, the United States of America, and one of the most efficient prison systems on this planet, we do not have one drug-free prison.
That's right. That's right.
And if you can't keep drugs out of prison, who's going to be ludicrous enough to think you can keep them out of a free society?
Absolutely. We're speaking with Peter Christie. He's a retired police captain from Syracuse, New York, with Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. Please check out the website, leap.cc or copsaylegalizeddrugs.com. And Peter, sorry to interrupt you. Go right back to what you were doing. Just want to make sure people tuning in late knew who we were talking to.
Gotcha. No problem at all. So what if we can't make drugs go away, if we agree that that's not possible, then the only discussion is who's going to run the marketplace. And I don't want gangsters, thugs, and terrorists to be making money off of this stuff.
Yeah.
I think that's a bad idea. I don't know of a drug in the world that if you take it makes you go out and cut off the heads of 40 Mexicans and lay them along the roadside.
No.
That isn't the drugs that cause that. That's people fighting over the marketplace and the money. And that, you know, Al Capone was not a product of alcohol. Al Capone was a product of alcohol prohibition.
Absolutely. And you know, you mentioned how it's law enforcement against prohibition, prohibiting consensual activities. So does that mean that, you know, Leap would be fighting against the laws that criminalize prostitution?
Exactly. Gambling. Other consensual adult activities. And again, that does not mean we condone anything. Let me give you a wonderful example of the difference between a legalized marketplace and an illegal marketplace. Do you recall a couple months ago when the Secret Service got in trouble down in Columbia because they were monkeying around with the hookers down there?
Yes.
Okay. Now, in New York City, prostitution is illegal. That never would have happened in New York City. Now, don't misunderstand me. I'm not suggesting that because it's illegal in New York, there aren't any prostitutes. There's plenty of prostitutes in New York City. The reason why that problem never would have come up in New York City is this. If one of the Secret Service had got a prostitute in New York City and ripped her off, and that's what happened in Columbia, he didn't want to pay, that prostitute in New York City never would have called the police because they would have arrested her.
Right.
Not the person that stole from her. But her, the person who was providing something that somebody wanted to buy. Okay. In Colombia, when the prostitute got ripped off, the first thing she did was report it to the police.
That's right. And it's the same situation so many Americans face now who might have a pot plant in the closet who aren't going to call 911 when there's something bad going on.
Exactly. In fact, I was talking to somebody living out in fact, I don't know if, do you know Casper Leach?
Oh, yeah. Casper's here in Portland with me.
Yeah. Okay. Time for hemp.
Yes.
All that stuff. Okay.
Yes.
He just moved recently out to Oregon. And I forget who he was talking to out there, but somebody had a grow operation because they have medical marijuana out there.
Right, right.
And somebody broke into the grow operation. And the alarm system called the police. And the police called the owner down, and they arrested the burglars.
Yeah.
And let the that's what we're supposed to, that's what law enforcement is supposed to do.
That's right. Casper's here in Portland, Oregon with us. We're broadcasting out of Portland, Oregon as well.
Ah, outstanding. Well, the police work, modern-day police work, was invented in London, England, by a guy by the name of Robert Peel. Now, interestingly enough, that's the reason they call them bobbies in London.
Oh, yeah, Robert. Because, yeah.
All right? And they also call them peelers, because named after his last name. That's another nickname they have for their police over there. They don't call them cops. They call them bobbies and peelers.
Hmm.
But anyways, when he designed that first London police department, the whole idea behind it was to have a group of people in the community that would protect people from other people. That's what they were designed to do. And in our country, there is only one organization in our country that is granted the right to use physical force against our own citizens, and it's not the Army. It's the police department. And the reason why we grant the police departments the right to use physical force, including deadly physical force against their own citizens, is because when you're trying to stop somebody from harming somebody else, you have to use force to do that. That's why we're granted that power. And that's what we are there for. When you pass laws like these drug laws, you're not asking us to protect people from other people. You're asking us to protect people from themselves because we know what's better for them, you know, and we're going to make them live the way they, you know, when the Puritans first came over here, the first thing they did was put people in jail for not being in church on Sunday. So this is not a new thing that we're inventing in this country, this idea that we have to force people to be things. You got the mayor of New York City who was once decided that you could only have this size glass.
Right.
Because you might get fat if you drink too much. Now, the idea that you have to have a smaller one, but you could buy two of them at the same time is a little ridiculous. It's kind of like making gay be illegal and then sending them to all female and all male prisons when you arrested them. A little bit ridiculous, okay?
You know, one of the things that I always like to say when, you know, I talk a lot about legalization of not just marijuana but other drugs, and people kind of react, oh, my God, marijuana maybe, but not other drugs, oh, my gosh. And I always say, well, legalization isn't like a destination. It's a spectrum. I mean, aspirin's legal, morphine's legal. I think they should all be on that spectrum somewhere. But I think you've got a quote on your bio page on Leap that I think sums it up best. Legalization just means removal of Schedule One. Everything else is discussion of regulation.
That's absolutely.
That's fantastic.
In fact, that was an incident at a DPA conference back in 1999, and we're sitting around the table. Mark Greer was there, and Nadelman, and a bunch of other the usual people.
Mm-hmm.
And we're arguing, if you remember this movement back in the 90s, there were a lot of people running around saying, don't use the L word, don't talk about legalization, right? And I was one of the ones that said, gee, it's the only word I know how to pronounce, I can't stop using it, you know. So finally, at one point in frustration, Nadelman looks at me across the table, and he says, legalization, what does it mean? Give me a definition. And off the top of my head, I blurted that out. Legalization simply means the elimination of Schedule One. All other discussion is about regulation. At that moment, Mark Greer reached across the table with a pen in his hand and said, write that down. Write that down. Yeah. You're going to want to keep that. Write that down. So that's because I'm one of those, to show you what an arrogant idiot I am, I'm the only person I know of that has a quote of themselves on the bottom of their email.
On your sig line. That's fantastic. We're speaking with Peter Crist with Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, leap.cc or copsaylegalizeddrugs.com. And you can get a speaker like Peter. There's Leap speakers all over the United States of America. And I don't know, do you have in other countries too?
Oh, yeah. We have, just to give you an example of the breadth of the organization, we started out, there were five of us, the original five. Mm-hmm. Four of us were from the States, and one was a Canadian. On the original board. The guy that was a Canadian ended up moving on to other things and stuff like that, and some of the other people did, but we have since added people to the board. Now, three of the people on our board, one is a full-time Vancouver police officer still on the job. Another one is a retired judge from Brazil. She's retired. And another one is our latest board member, and she was part of MI5 over in England, and she now lives in Germany, and she's on our board. So we have German, Brazilian, and Canadian, plus American people. This is not just an American problem. This is a worldwide issue, and the use of this policy of dealing with things is forced a lot by America. When Uri Gray was talking about legalizing marijuana or legalizing drugs, and they banged up against that international treaty from the 1970s that the United States stuck a section into that says that none of the sides of this treaty will legalize any of these drugs. That's why in Amsterdam, marijuana is illegal, but it's just allowed to be sold in cafes and stuff. Right. In Switzerland, drugs are still illegal, but they supply heroin to people. In Portugal, drugs are still illegal, but they don't arrest people for possession, and they give treatment to people, and they're having much better success with those kind of things than they are with the criminalization of it. And it's interesting to get back to that elimination of Schedule One. We had a huge argument in this country. It was a prohibition argument about 12, 13 years ago, and it was about a pill. And I'm going to give both names of this pill so that I don't offend anybody. It's either the morning after pill or the baby killing pill, depending on the way you look at it. Okay. We argued back and forth on all the news channels about whether that pill should be allowed to be sold in America. That was the prohibition argument. Finally, after hearing both sides of it, the FDA decided that the pill should be allowed to be sold in America, but it would have to be sold only through the prescription drug program. So the only way you could buy the pill was to go to a doctor, get a permission slip, a prescription, and then you could go buy the pill from a pharmacist. 2 years ago, after seeing this pill under the prescription drug things for about 8 or 9 years and no problems with it, the Food and Drug Administration took the pill off prescription. Now all you have to do is be 17 years or older, and you could walk into a pharmacy and buy that pill over the counter. Just, you don't need a prescription, just with ID. That was a regulatory change that couldn't have happened if we didn't decide the prohibition argument 10 years ago. And that's exactly what I mean about eliminating Schedule One. If we tell the federal government, look, if you want to regulate the hell out of these drugs, you do whatever you do. You just can't prohibit them. And there's an interesting little satellite to any of the legal people out there. And trust me, everybody, every attorney I say this to tells me I'm out of my mind. I don't know what I'm talking about. And they're probably 100% correct. But anyhow, we have a thing in our Constitution that grants to the federal government the power to deal with, to be the arbiter for interstate commerce disputes. It's called the Interstate Commerce.
Right.
Okay. It's in our Constitution. And that gives power, it says right in there, it gives power to the federal government to regulate, that's the word that's in there, interstate commerce. Now, when we decided that we were going to solve our alcohol problem by banning alcohol, it was determined that in order to do that, we had to do something first. And I just want to back up a little bit. We live under a very interesting form of government. And that government is determined by the people, but it starts out with a constitution that guarantees certain particular rights to people. and those rights are stipulated in the Constitution. And when the courts of the late 1800s, early part of the 20th century, when they read the Commerce Clause and they read the word regulate interstate commerce, they did not see that giving the power to the states or to the federal government to prohibit interstate commerce, but only to regulate it. So in order to give the federal government the power to prohibit interstate commerce, we had to change the Constitution of the United States in order to give the government that power. It's called the 18th Amendment, the Prohibitionary Amendment. Then once we gave the government the power to do that, then the government passed the Volstead Act, which was a law that banned alcohol and all that other stuff. Okay. Then we went through 13 years of prohibition. We finally ended it, came out the other end, and by then the courts had become comfortable with it, and now there was no problem with them prohibiting interstate commerce. And this, the Commerce Clause got bastardized into being a prohibitionary thing. I believe if they start arguing today in the court that this is a wrong interpretation and that the federal government simply does not have the power to do this, they can regulate as much as they want, they just can't prohibit. If we do that, it'll fail in the first few attempts. Just like in the 1920s and 1930s and 1940s when people argued that separate but equal was in fact wrong and the courts kept upholding it and upholding it. And then all of a sudden in 1954 we passed Brown versus Board of Education and the court changed their mind and said, no, you know, that's not right. We can't do that anymore. Segregation's wrong. It took all those years preceding that of argument to get them to the point where they changed. We're not even arguing this in front of the court anymore. And I think that with the conservative court that we got, I think they would see this very quickly. In fact, some of them, Scalia on one case and can't think of the other one now that did it, but he on another case mentioned that nobody asked us this question.
I think it was Alito reference. You know, and maybe I'm the same kind of out of your mind as you are, Peter, because I've made the same arguments. I've said if you've got an interstate commerce clause that says that you can ban commerce, then that commerce doesn't exist. So how are you regulating something that doesn't exist?
Right. And I'll give you an example of the difference between the word regulate and prohibit. Okay. You and a bunch of your friends get together and you pool all your money and you go out someplace, you buy a huge tract of land, and then you build a city on it. And you put streets and sidewalks in and office buildings and apartments and you get the whole city done. And you realize that before you open it up to the public, you're going to have to do something, and that is you're going to have to regulate traffic in that city, or it's going to be a zoo. So you hire me, an old traffic cop, and you say, hey, would you set up a regulatory system for us? And I look at it and I say, yeah, I can do that. $150,000, I'll put together a program for you. And you say, okay, fine, and I leave. I come back 30 days later and I hand you an envelope, and you hand me my check, and I start to walk away, and you open up the envelope, and in the envelope is one slip of paper. And you open up the piece of paper, and on the piece of paper is one line. And the line says, there will be no vehicles allowed inside the city limits. Now, are you going to consider that a form of regulation? Or are you going to say, hey, we want our money back. Any idiot could have done this. We want it regulated.
Well, and, you know, to take that metaphor and run with it a little bit. Okay, so because in our city, you know, we know that we're going to need traffic and we're going to need cars and want to drive them, despite the argument that we could walk or take bicycles. I say that in the legalization argument, part of what's missing is to admit to ourselves as a country, as a culture, that drugs are fun, and some people like to have fun with them, and not all use is abuse.
Absolutely, and I'll tell you the big thing. And there's a few words in life that I just, for my own use, I have my own definition of them. And one of them is the word liberty. And here's my definition of the word liberty: the right to be as stupid as you choose to be, as long as you do not harm another person or another person's property. That's how I define liberty. Now, most people, when I say that, they laugh. They say, oh, you're being silly. I say, no, I'm not. No, I'm not. And this is very important. There is a thing throughout history that I refer to as the stupid, crazy, genius phenomenon. And we'll use our friend Tom as an example of this. Have you seen Tom lately? He's up on top of the hill over there, and you aren't going to believe this. He thinks he's going to catch light inside a glass ball and light the world. How stupid can you be? 2 years later, what's Tom up to? I'm telling you, he's crazy. He's still up on the hill. 2 years now, still thinks he's going to catch light inside a glass ball. How crazy can you get? 2 years later, do you hear about Tom? What? He caught light inside a glass ball. He's going to light the world. He's a genius. Stupid, crazy genius. All through our history, the first person that thought of the new idea was called stupid. If they persisted, we then called them crazy. And once we all caught up and figured out it was a great idea, we called them genius. Now, hold on. I admit wholeheartedly that 90% of the stupid people out there are, in fact, stupid. Okay? They're never going to be geniuses. They're stupid, okay? Uh-huh. But we still need the geniuses. So yeah. That means we have to put up with all the stupidity and protect it, because we don't know which ones are going to be the genius until the whole thing plays out. And that's why we grant liberty, because it's best for all of us.
Peter Crist from Leap, we could go another hour with you, but we got to wrap things up. So thank you for joining us. It's leap.cc, copsaylegalizeddrugs.com. Peter Crist, thanks again for joining us. We had a great time.
Thank you. Me too, Russ. And there's many more of us out here, so I'm sure you'll have one of us back.
That's right. Thank you so much. And we will. Every first and third Thursday, we have got a Cops Say Legalized Drugs segment, so you can catch another speaker for Leap in another couple of Thursdays. So make sure you tune in for that. When we come back, we will have a little time to say goodbye in the first hour, and then we'll lead you into hour two, Toker Talk Radio, where we take your calls at 971-533-7111.
The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. Attention, National Cannabis Radio listeners. If you haven't heard the political pontifications of Lively and Mr. Libra on the Libra Lounge yet, be sure to visit here Wednesday nights at 6 Pacific, or visit thelibralounge.com for archives and links to download current episodes. Be a lounger.
The Libra Lounge.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson, and I need your help. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 20s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stop arresting law-abiding citizens because they prefer marijuana over alcohol. Nearly 2,000 Americans are arrested every day on marijuana charges. We're unfairly destroying the lives and careers of hundreds of thousands of people each year simply because they smoke marijuana. These are not criminals. They're average citizens like you, good neighbors who work hard, raise families, pay taxes, and contribute to their communities. We need your help to end marijuana prohibition once and for all. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant.
All right, folks, less than a minute here left on the show, but I did just want to make mention, once again, we called it on the show yesterday, but of Morgan Freeman, who in a wide-ranging interview with Newsweek said about marijuana legalization, marijuana, heavens, oh yes, it's just the stupidest law possible given history. You don't stop people from doing what they want to do, so forget about making it unlawful. You're just making criminals out of people who aren't engaged in criminal activity. And we're spending zillions of dollars trying to fight a war we can't win. We could make zillions. Just legalize it and tax it like we do liquor. It's stupid. But I also wanted to bring up another part of the quote that didn't get covered. But he mentioned how his views evolved on same-sex marriage on this. He says, I grew up in the South, but I started dancing in my 20s when I got out of the Air Force. And studying dance, you're surrounded by gay guys all the time. You get to know them, and you have to shift gears. And that just reminds us of how we've got to get to know the people in our community, and we've got to come out to the people that we know and let them know we are pot smokers and we are good people and we do go to work and get things done and take care of our kids and lead wonderful lives. That's what's going to change things, and you can be a part of it. Thanks for joining us here at the Russ Belville Show and National Cannabis Radio. We're going to take it into Hour 2, Toker Talk Radio, where we've got the full crew here live in the studio, and we're looking forward to talking to you at 971-533-7111. So for Cannabis Carrie, Ganja John, and Wiz Khalifa, I'm Radical Russ. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.